Welcome to Brave New Bookshelf, a podcast that explores the fascinating intersection of AI and authorship. Join hosts Steph Pajonas and Danica Favorite as they dive into thought-provoking discussions, debunk myths, and highlight the transformative role of AI in the publishing industry.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to an episode of the Brave New Bookshelf. I'm CTO of Future Fiction Academy, Steph Pajonas. And at the Future Fiction Academy, we teach authors how to use AI in any part of their business. We're doing a lot of cool stuff at the Future Fiction Academy as usual. And we just got back from going to New Orleans for the Writer MBA conference, which was a lot of fun and a lot of talking about AI and tools and really just getting into the nitty-gritty of things. And that was exciting. It was super exciting. And it was exciting mostly because I got to see my friends, including my lovely co-host, Danica Favorite. Danica, how are you doing today?
I'm good, thank you. Yeah, really good. Missing you, of course. We did get a lot of fun times together. We even sat in the coffee shop and wrote together, which was super fun.
It was nice, wasn't it?
Yeah. Anyway, for those of you who don't know me, I am Danica Favorite. I am the community manager at PublishDrive, where we help authors on all stages of their publishing journey, whether that is formatting the manuscript, coming up with great blurbs and book covers, to getting your book distributed out to the largest worldwide market, and then finally splitting your royalties. So all that jazz between us and Steph, we have you covered for all kinds of great stuff in publishing. Yeah, I love what we do. I love that we get to work together on this stuff. And today I'm really excited to welcome our guest, Olivia Regal. We've known Olivia online, it seems forever. I know we've met in person a few times at conferences. And she is just one of those authors that is out there kicking butt, taking names, and doing all kinds of stuff that's very cool with AI. I want to introduce Olivia to you and let Olivia tell you all a little bit about herself, and then we'll dive into asking her all the questions and finding about her AI use. So, Olivia, welcome. Say hello to our guests.
Hello, hello. I'm really excited to be here. And I was telling some French friends that I was coming over and they said, "You're going to tell in public that you're writing with AI?" And I say, "Yes." And they say, "Are you crazy?" Because in France, there's still a witch hunt about anybody who publishes with AI. If you have your covers made with AI, you're stealing the jobs of the illustrators. If you're making music with Suno AI, you're stealing the jobs of the musicians. And I'm trying to say no, because the AI will never replace us. It's like having a tool. When you go to the south of France, you don't ride the horse and change horse at the end of every day. No, you take a car. You've gone with the tools that you have. And there was a conference last year, I think it was in November, and some girl said, "I will never use AI." And the person at the conference said, "Do you text? Do you have an iPhone?" And she said, "Yes," and said, "I'm very sorry to tell you, you've been using AI." Anyway, I also have a YouTube channel, which is called Auteurpreneur, where I talk about using AI and all the various things. And I've made videos about RaptorWrite so that we would have a French guide on how to use it. I've made videos about it. So if you hear that I've been burned, it's because they connected the dots.
Oh, no, we don't want that. We don't want that.
I'm glad that you were sharing that experience about even people in France have this anti-AI attitude, because we talk about that a lot here and just how it's wrong. And so I love that you're out there fighting the good fight. If people want to burn you, we will be there to protect you, or at least stand in the flames with you. Because I think at this point, we just have to acknowledge that AI is here. It's not going to go away. As everyone says, you're not going to put the genie back in the bottle. So let's figure out how to use it and be the ones who are controlling this technology, rather than allowing the corporations and everyone else to take over and force us to use it in ways we don't want to. Like, we have the reins. You're talking about the horses. We've got the reins right now. So let's guide that horse wherever we're going.
Yeah. And another thing, I think readers want to have books. And they want to have good books and good stories. And they don't care if we still write it with ink and a quill, or if we type it on a machine, or if we do it with AI, as long as they have good books. Our manufacturing process, it's, you don't want to know how the sausage is done. Same thing with the book. Sometimes you have beta readers that will go with you through the process. They will read the chapter and give you feedback. Most of the readers don't want to know how it's done, and they don't care.
They only really care about that final output, right? Like that final story that wowed them or touched them or whatever it may be, that is where the proof is that you've done your job, whether you used an AI tool or not. I agree. I definitely don't want to go back in time and try to do things like with a typewriter or with a pen and ink. I want to be using the tools that I have right now that are at my disposal right in front of me.
And if you do want to use pen and ink, it was great. We had Kevin McLaughlin on here, and he was talking about some of this. And actually, he and I in New Orleans were sitting there, and there he was in his notebook with his pen and ink, writing and taking pictures of it, and using AI to take that text and m move it into the written word in terms of like typewritten words. So, yeah, if you want to use pen and ink, you can still do that. You can still do whatever process you want. And as Kevin showed us, it's something that we still can use and make work for us. So, I wanted to go back to what you said, Olivia, about the readers. So, obviously, you're using AI and you're like, the readers don't care. Is that, has that been your experience where your readers like, nope, just give us the books?
I haven't really had that conversation. It's my opinion that they don't care, and that the noise about, oh, it's not fair, they're using AI, come from the fear of those who don't use it. And unless you start using it, and then you decide if it's for you and it's not for you, and what part of it is for you. I'm going to backtrack. I started publishing in 2013. I don't know if anybody remembers Elle Casey. She used to write a book a month, and she was like me. She was a lawyer who decided she was tired of telling the fiction of other people, and she wanted to tell her own fiction. And everybody was suspicious because she was writing so fast, but that was her full-time job, and they were saying she's got ghostwriter. So every time you do something that is out of the beaten path, people will suspect you of doing very weird things.
That's true. I was also one who published in 2013. My first book came out in September of 2013. And I remember Elle Casey. And just, I feel like it comes from a place of jealousy where people are just like, wow, she's pumping out a book a month. I wish I could do that. Why can't I do that? There must be something wrong with me, or the person who is succeeding, they must be cheating. That's like the cycle of thought that people have when it comes to this business, right? It's like they must be cheating, or there's something wrong with me, and we don't want to look
Have
inward
something wrong
about
with
that.
that.
Yes,
And
exactly.
I can attest that as far as Elle is concerned, one day she called me up and she said, "Can I move in with you for 1 month? I'm going to lock myself in one of the bedrooms and write a novel." And I, okay. And she would come out at mealtime and to shower. And then she did nothing but write for a month. And at the end of the month, she had a novel. And then she rinsed and repeat. But yeah, in 2013, I wrote a few novellas. It didn't really go well. I think I sold 700 copies in 1 year, which you never look at those who do worse than you. You always look at the Lucy Score or the Janet Ivanovich or the big names. And I thought maybe I'm not good at that at all. And then, just for the heck of it, because Kindle Unlimited had started to happen, the Kindle publishing had started to happen in France, I translated one of my books, and I got number one in the Amazon France store. And I said to myself, okay, I don't suck. I have a visibility problem because in the US, if I have a penny for every time I've heard, the market is flooded, we can't really do anything about it anymore, I could retire. I decided to learn marketing, and I also jumped in with bundles. So that was 2014. with Blair Babylon, we create something called the Red Hot Authors, and we published 8 bundles in 1.5 years. Stayed on the USA Today bestseller list for 4 weeks with one of them. It was fun time. Anyway, so that's ancient history. I started looking at AI, and my first touch with AI for writing, because I was still practicing law at the time, was when PseudoWrite came. And then I had met Elizabeth a few times, but I really didn't know her. And then I saw her teaching on PseudoWrite. And it's like everybody feels like Elizabeth is their best friend because they have spent hours with her, except that she doesn't know us because we're on the other side of the screen. So anyway, the first thing was PseudoWrite, and I was not happy with it. There's one thing that I hate, absolutely, it's editing. I write very clean. When I write something, it's almost good to go. And then the next day, before I start writing again, I read the previous chapter and then I go on. So this is my editing process. Going in and editing something that the AI has written that I'm not happy with was pure torture. So there was no interest for me to do that. Also, I had a problem, but I guess that's not with AI, that's with people, because they don't understand that AI hallucinate. That when you ask a question and AI doesn't know, AI will invent. It will make up a pretty story. There's people who got disbarred for that because instead of doing their research in the classical way, what they did is give me a case law that says this and that. And I'm guessing the AI went looking for case law like that, but there was no case law like that. So it just invented a case law, gave it like a nice little citation. The guy put it in his brief with the citation, didn't bother to check if it was real or not, and then put it to the judge who say, "Oh, this is interesting. I like this decision. I want to know more about it," and went looking for it and found that it didn't exist. So I would not say stupidity because it was smart to ask the AI. I would say it's the laziness of not checking afterwards or the absolute truth. It doesn't really matter because we're writing fiction. So if we write something that is false, it's not like we're saving lives. It's not important. So my first feeling about AI was not a good one because it put people in trouble. They put themselves in trouble. AI didn't do that, but still. And second, it was more work than it was worth it. And then I went to NINC in 2 years ago. So not 24, but 23. And you had just started the FFA. Elizabeth got me in the boat and I started using AI in a smarter way. And I started using AI so much that I didn't do anything else but use AI and learn about AI. My number one is Woo, my number two is Learner. I want to know all the things. I want to try everything. It's like a kid in a toy store. I want to play with the truck, and then I want to be Barbie doctor, and then I want to be the little chemist. And there was just so much of it. I realized that my production had gone down and I hadn't published anything in months. So I left the FFA for a while to get myself back into track. And now I'm back. I'm in love with RaptorWrite. I think it's the most fantastic thing. And what I understand, because like I said, my number one is Woo, so I talk to everybody and I even the introvert, I will go and fish them out and torture them. Everybody has their own process, and whatever your process was before AI should stay your process. It's just that you're going to get the assistant with the AI. For instance, I'm a pantser. I just have a starting point. And since it's romantic suspense, we know they're going to end up together. But what happens between my starting point and the end where they live happily ever after? I have no clue. I discover it as I go along. And sometimes you get yourself stuck into a corner and you have no idea where you're going. So you pick up your phone and you call your best friend and you say, "Give me an idea." And your friend gives you an idea and you say, "I don't like it. Give me another idea." And by the fifth time you've said to your best friend, "I don't like your idea," your best friend will politely tell you, "Get lost." AI is my best friend who never gets upset with me. And actually, I said, "No, I don't like this idea." "Oh, you're right. It wasn't that great. Let me think about something else." So for bouncing ideas, it's absolutely magical. And even if you don't like the ideas, you have that tsunami of ideas that comes out you. Maybe you'll do a mash between one thing and the other, and you'll come out with something that will make you bounce. I was watching Alana Johnson's interview with you, and she does about the same thing, is like she will ask for an idea and another idea, and sometimes just bouncing off somebody else. And this way, you don't have to upset your friends by telling them their idea is stupid, and because the AI doesn't get offended. So that's the first thing I do with AI, is bounce off idea. The second thing I do is I use Mira Gold prompts. Mira has created a bunch of GPTs. So when you go on her site, which is miragoldprompts.com, at the bottom of the page, you have write me copy, write me a blurb, write me taglines, write me whatever. So you click on this, it brings you on ChatGPT. Then you can throw your entire manuscript inside of it, and it will spit you out a blurb and taglines. And you know what? It does this in Portuguese. It does this in Italian. It does this in French. So if you're pushing translations and you don't know the first word of that language, go for it. If you're really prudent, because trust but check and verify, is you take whatever the ChatGPT has given you in Portuguese, and they say, "What does that mean in English?" or "What does that mean in French?" And it will translate it for you. You'll know if the AI has gone over the top or if it's right on track. Sometimes I find it must be because Mira writes dark romance. It tends to do things in a very dramatic tone. So if you're doing a blurb for a Christmas romance and it's very sweet and cozy, it's going to make it sound more dramatic than it is. So you just have to correct course and say, "Nope, this is sweet romance. The level of drama is very low. Please rephrase," and it will do it.
I love how you're taking like prompts of other people and things like that and really using them, but making them your own, which I think is really cool that you've found this process for yourself and are using it in a way that works for you.
Your journey was very similar to mine. I started off with Pseudorite, and then it wasn't giving me what I wanted after a while, so learned how to prompt and then moved on to all these other tools. So it's interesting that when I talk to people who started at the beginning of this whole process of learning AI, when we started back in 2022, 2023, that a lot of people have the same pipeline for coming into AI writing, which is not really surprising, but it is comforting, I'll tell you that much.
And a lot
It
of
is.
people say to you, "Oh, but it doesn't work." But it's like saying, to start your car, you got to put the crank to, like they did in the 20s, to start the engine. So that was what it was like at the beginning. Now there's so much progress. It's just amazing. And if you're a plotter, and sometimes I regret not being a plotter, because I said you can do the entire outline and then you write it. But my problem is, if I have an outline, I'm bored because I already know where I'm going. I want to be surprised. And the best experience for being surprised is co-writing, which I've done a few times, where you have to be with another pantser, where you write your chapter and I write at night. So I would write my chapter at night. I would send it to my co-author. My co-author would read it. And sometimes in the day, she would send back the chapter. So you're having the discovery of writing your own stuff, but you're also like reading somebody else's book because you get her chapter and you have no idea. And the game was to have a cliffhanger at the end of every single chapter. It's like, "The car turned over. You're on your own, girl." And one thing I was thinking, and I haven't done it, is to try to co-write with the AI, have the AI write the guy and I would write the girl, and say to the AI, okay, this is the story now. Now figure out what's coming next.
I love that idea. We should totally do that idea. Like, I'm just saying, I'm gonna write chapter one, you write chapter two, then I'll pick it up and we'll just go back and forth and see what story we get on the end. And I think that's a fabulous idea. I'm totally gonna do
I know, I think it sounds
that.
fun. I love this that we get to find out all of these new fun little ideas and tricks that we can learn. So you've talked a lot about like your journey with the AI and publishing and how you've approached that, but one of the things that I really want to hear from you, because this is something that Steph and I just love that you're doing, is you're using AI for all kinds of things. So you've got this really multifaceted approach to using AI in your publishing process. So can you tell us about some of the other ways that you're using AI in publishing?
I speak English, I think fluently, French, totally fluently, and a little Spanish. And I'm lazy. I'm extremely lazy. So what I figured out when I started publishing was you write one book and then you have somebody translate it into German and in Italian and French and Portuguese and Spanish. And all of a sudden you have five or six books when you only had to write one. So I painfully translated my own books into French, which was not that painful, but it was amusing because I realized some things I would say in French. In English, I wouldn't say them the same way in French. And I changed entire parts of book because it didn't sound good in French or it didn't go with the culture. 20 years ago, I had a friend who wrote for Harlequin. And actually, what she did was translate the English Harlequin book into French. And she would have to culturally rearrange them. Like, for instance, the American women liked bearded guys. In France, in the 70s and 80s, we didn't like facial hair. So the hero of the book was shaved. And in the American book, the guy takes you out on a date at the first night, he kisses you, and he says, "We'll do this again soon, and I have a day in court tomorrow." And he goes home without even trying to seduce you. The American woman gets it because he's serious. He's a lawyer. He's going to be a good provider and he's reasonable. The French woman is, "What the heff? If on the first date he doesn't try to get into my pants, what is this going to be 10 years from now when we're married? We're never going to have sex at all." So she would have to rearrange the book to match the culture. All this to say that translating is fun, but translating is also rewriting in some cases. Back to translation. So I used to do my translation myself, and then when AI came along, I tried DeepL, which was the first free translation tool we had. And I would throw a chapter in DeepL and then I would rewrite it and I would edit it seriously. But it was faster than doing it directly myself. And sometimes DeepL came up with very good translations of colloquial expressions. And the one I always give is in English, you say it's not kosher. In French, you say ce n'est pas catholique. Ça n'est pas très catholique. It's not very Catholic. So, you need the AI to have enough knowledge to translate the colloquial expression. So I did that, but I didn't feel, because of my experience of what it had been translating into French, I didn't feel comfortable putting something into the AI and then throwing out a translation into the world. What I did is I hired translators, but translators are very expensive. German translators are 4 or 5 cents a word. And if you write a 50,000 word book, it adds up. Now we have Steph's method that she taught into the FFA. And then if you're lazy, because Steph's method requires work, you have Scribe Shadow. Scribe Shadow has one advantage is they have the prompts required to format in the destination language. Like, for instance, in English, a dialogue will start with, quote, "I am very happy to see you, comma, quote, she said, period." In French, it would be em dash, "I am very happy to see you, comma, said she." So the subject and the verb are in verse. I know the French one because I speak the language and I've read in French, but I'm sure there's the same thing in German and there's the same thing in Hungarian or Polish or whatever. And that's where Scribe Shadow has cornered the market because they have their own prompt to which we do not have access. And normally, I'm with Elizabeth on this. I want tools where I can prompt myself and I want to know what I'm asking the AI to do. But sometimes I don't know what to ask the AI to do, and I don't want to go and study Spanish formatting or Italian formatting. So I'll give the money to Scribe Shadow to do it for me.
Scribe Shadow is pretty great. They've done a lot of the work on the back end. They recognize that they need to understand the market and they need to understand the target languages where you're going to, right? And so that's one of the things I'm still trying to work with the AI, like having a conversation with the AI about the different formatting between the different languages so that I can understand what's different and then therefore make the prompt a little bit better on the back end for those sorts of things. And it's still a work in progress. I feel like the AI translations class that I did for FFA is 95% there, and there's this little bit at the very end that is still a little nebulous, and people are figuring it out as they go. But I think sometimes getting you there to that 95% really is the bulk of the work.
Yeah, and even when you have a human translators, you have human translators, you have errors. I'll give you a cute one. I had a friend who hired a translator to translate her book in French, and I had read the book in English, and now I'm reading the book in French, and the woman is pouring half her cup of coffee in one cup and the other one in another cup. And now she writes very quirky characters. But I didn't remember. And I thought that was really weird because she did that a few times. And so I go back to the book in English and then I get it. The woman is pouring half and half in her coffee.
Half and
And
half.
if you have never had half and half, if you've never been in the States, you don't know what it is. So the translator didn't know. And she just assumed it was half the coffee there, half the coffee there. Even human error happens.
Oh, absolutely. That's so funny. As you were saying the story, I was like, oh, wait, it's half and half the. I go to other countries plenty, and I realized the last time I traveled abroad that there is no half and half in other countries. I would ask for it, and they'd be like, I'm like, how about cream? Cream? Can we do cream? They're like, oh, yeah, sure, we can do that. And then you get something really delicious
Well,
that you
that's
can put in your
hilarious. See,
coffee.
I didn't get it until she explained it because I drink my coffee black. So I'm like, I don't, I, why is this funny? And then when she said half and half, I'm like, oh yeah, that's funny. But it is like those cultural context things and those clues that we don't always know. And I like what you were saying in terms of the translation to pay a translator is really expensive and you're not necessarily going to get good results. There's all these other cool tools that you can use to get there. So tell us, because I know you've done a lot of translations. What languages are you translating into now?
So in French, where I do it myself, in German, I've had several translators. Most of them were good. What I do now is I have the AI translate it, and then I hire a proofer who edits it. That's what I do in German. Because the problem is, if you go on the market and you throw something that's unreadable, you have killed your name. People will not trust you. There is one author right now who has an advertising where the tagline ends with all the steam. It's a steamy romance and it's all the steam. In French, AI translated it. It says, and all the vapeur. And it's steam, but it's vapor, like when you're steaming your dumplings. So it's the same word, but a steamy romance is not a. So you look at this and you laugh because you think dumplings or you think, something steamed in the kitchen, vapor.
Yeah, sometimes those little misses are enough to really throw things off, right?
And if it's bad in your blurb, nobody's going to pick up your book.
Exactly.
So, however, I translated, so I did something stupid, not stupid, but annoying. 2 weeks ago, I translated an entire series in Portuguese because I was debating to with myself, should I translate in Brazilian or should I translate in Portuguese? And I figured there's more people in Brazil, but the level of earning, the spending money is higher in Portugal. So I said, okay. And then I'm thinking Brazilian people who are reading, they probably can read Portuguese. So I translate the seven books, I format my seven ebooks, I format my seven paperbacks, and I throw everything on Amazon. And then I speak to Christina, who says, no, the market is in KU, Brazil, and you can't put the Portuguese books there. So I had a fit with myself, and then I put myself up. I say, okay, let's do this again. And I translated the same seven book into Brazilian Portuguese. And what I did is I targeted the Brazilian books to .com.br. And then I put a little Brazilian flag on the cover. And then I targeted the European Portuguese version to the Spanish market because there's no Amazon Portugal. I'm assuming they must look in the Amazon Spain. And also, interestingly, Amazon Spain lets you do paperback. Amazon Brazil doesn't. When you do your paperback and you look to put the target country, there's no .com, not BR.
I did not
So,
know that. That's crazy. What
yeah.
I love about this is we were curious about AI translations, but I feel like this is really a masterclass in translations, period, and things that authors need to think about because people say, oh, translations. And it's clearly more than just, oh, I'll get my book translated in another language and put it up in that market. Like, you really have to do your homework and understand what's available and what that market is like. So, yes, this is so good, Olivia.
And it was Kate Rudolph who started translating in Spanish. And I said, how do you price? Because here again, people have more money in Spain, but there's more people in all of South America. So how do you target your price? What do you do? And who do you target your advertising to? And she says, I go and look at the price of a beer in Mexico, and a book is going to occupy them for more time than having a beer with friends. So, una cerveza, uno libro. And I thought that was so smart.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of looking at the target country and figuring out like how much a sandwich costs, how much a bottle of water costs, how much a beer costs, and then that gives you a good idea of what you can target for books. But then, of course, looking at comp books in the market and seeing what's selling at what price points, and that can help to sort of figure out things a little bit because some of those prices are just automatically changed from US dollars. Like they're just currency conversion happening there. So you can't really rely on that too much, but you definitely will look at rankings to figure out if they're selling or not.
One thing to know if you're doing paperback in France, two things to know. You must have the price on the cover, it's a legal obligation. And second, the slide goes the other way. So let me get a book. I'll show you with a book. Okay, this is an American book. It's that way. So you can read it, the wrong side of the law. And then the front cover is on the top. If I put the front cover on the top of this one, it's upside down.
Oh, look at that. And what's the purpose of it having going in the opposite direction? Do you know or?
It's just, why do you the English write on the wrong side of the street? No, there,
True.
so there's no purpose. It's just a question of what is being done. And in the back, so it was a present that was given to me. So the bookstore will put a little tag to hide the price, but the price has to be on the back cover. It's required by law.
Okay. Yeah, there are all these little things you have to know about your target country and what you're going to do. So that is a good tip. I like that tip.
Yeah, you can try and throw something out at the market and see how it flies, which is what I'm doing with Portuguese and Brazilian. I will throw a $5 a day Facebook ad at it, see if it spends. And I think I spent $150. I have a book which is my bestseller in France. It's called Jade. It happens in Southeast Asia. I cannot give it away in English. And nobody wants it. I had it translated into German. They don't want it either. So I spent 4,000 euros paying the German translator for something that must have made 500 euros in German. Thankfully, the French version paid for the translation, but look for the market. We all want to be original and to be one of a kind, but no, you don't want to be a perfect snowflake. You want to be in the flow.
That's a great point. And I love this whole idea of figuring out a whole process of doing what is going to work for you, what's going to work for your book, and the particular market you're going to look at. And also genre. I like that you're like, this book didn't do well in this other country. That's important too. If people in that country aren't going to read that genre, you don't want to take that time. So, when you're using AI, because I know you use it for a lot of things, can you walk us through some of your workflows or maybe like an example of how you would do that?
I struggle with titles, and sometimes I don't have a title at all. I'm almost finished with a book, and it was book three in a trilogy. And the first book is A Bad Boy for Valentine's Day. The second book is A Survivor for Forever. And the third one, I had no clue. So I threw the book in AI and I had a conversation with the AI who came with A Sinner for Redemption. And I said, this is not a religious book. So let's try again. And then I try and try it again. And if I don't like anything I'm getting, I'll try again the next day. I'll ask for taglines. I'll ask for a summary. I want to do it, but there's only 24 hours in my day, and I like to sleep. I'd like to make a Bible of my series because I'm on the second generations of my bikers, and I want to not have cousins sleep together. And
See, right there, that is the best story Bible reason I have heard from an author. I don't want cousins to have to sleep together.
And you don't want John to become Jim and his green eyes to become blue. And I was thinking to create, but maybe somebody's done this already, a template of summarize the chapter. Tell me who's in that chapter. Describe the character in the chapter if it's the first time they're here, and specificities of that character. I'm sure it would be a template that would get changed as we would have the experience with it, but I think there's a market for that template.
Yeah, like a story Bible prompt template type thing. I've developed my own over time because I like to run my story Bibles in silos where it doesn't know that this chapter is really connected to other chapters or anything like that. So I ask very specific questions in my prompt and just get the information I need from that chapter. So you're basically using the AI for a lot of these extraneous tasks that you have to do, right? All the marketing, all like the bookkeeping things that you have to do to keep track of all of the stuff in your process.
And I'm a Notion fanatic. I have a Notion database with all my books. So I have different views of it. So you only have the info you need, but you have everything about the book except the book. You have the number of pages, the date that I uploaded for the first time, the date I reloaded it for the last time, what I did when I reloaded it, because I'm not getting any younger. And there's stuff that I forget. I really want to try the fine tune. The fine tune is my greatest hope. That, not that I think that I write the best way, but I like the way that I want to say it. And I really would like to try this. And maybe that will reconcile me with writing with the AI.
Yeah, I think everyone has their process, and I like that even though you haven't necessarily figured out like how to write with it, you've still figured out processes and things to do with it that make it yours and buy back some of those 24 hours in the day. I think that
Oh,
is
and
really
images are magical. Midge is my best friend. That's Mid Journey. I have unsubscribed to Midge, and I'm on a detox from Midge because if you want the one where you own the copyright, it's $60 a month. And if you don't, then everything, if you pay less, you can make the images, but you don't own the right. I'm not sure you can use them for your own covers. And see, that's the lawyer coming up again. So I'm on a detox, but I really love Midjourney. I've made fabulous guys I would take home on Midjourney.
I like that. So that brings us to my last question. What is your favorite AI tool? So is it Midge or do you have another AI tool that you really love?
I've started playing with Suno, which makes music, and I had things that had me, like, you call this music, and I had amazing songs. I have a Christmas song that I'm going to use for making videos for my Christmas books. I have a very hard rock, country-ish I Run Tornado song that I'm going to use on all my advertising. So right now my favorite toy is Suno, but that's because it's the latest toy. But Suno AI is magical.
I agree. I love making music with Suno. It's been a few weeks. I need to get back in there and start making some music. It's so much fun. So much fun. So that's your favorite one out of all the tools?
And also, they have a rapper that's using it and very vocal about it, who I happen to like a lot. So I felt vindicated that I'm not taking the music away from the music industry. I'm just making fun music.
I love that. And I think, Steph, I don't know if you used Suno, but if you listen to the intro music on our podcast, that is something that Steph made using AI.
Yes, I use Suno to make our intro music. It's
I love
fun.
that. It's so great. It's so great. So, yeah, Olivia, is there anything else you want to share with us? Any pieces about your AI journey or using AI that we didn't get to share? I feel like we could still keep talking for another couple of hours
Oh,
because,
yeah.
like,
I can
you've got
talk
all the great
forever.
stuff.
But yeah, there's one thing I do for my sweet pen name, which is something that was inspired by Steph, which is flash fiction. The concept she threw at us was say to the AI, I write, let's say, Christmas romance, and ask the AI for two or three word prompts. So you get list of prompts like present wrapping or Christmas tree decoration or eggnog preparation or making cookies. And then you take that two word prompt and you throw it into a visual AI, and the visual AI makes an image. And then you look at the image and you write a story. So you can write it yourself or you can write it with AI. Then you can take the end product and throw it in a vocal AI. And then I have it on the YouTube channel. And what I do too is every single week on every single Monday for the past 26 weeks, I've been sending a flash fiction to my readers. So I'm hoping to get a better opening rate on my newsletter. There's just so much you can do with it. And you're not stealing anybody else's job when you're doing that.
Now, I really enjoyed doing flash fiction back in November. I did it during the NaNoWriMo season. And I think I'm going to pick it back up again. I was just thinking about it the other day about how the fact that I miss doing it. It was a lot of fun. And I like the idea of sending it out every week to your newsletter subscribers because then that's material that keeps you at the forefront of their mind, right? So it's just another way to keep creating content that we like and we enjoy and that's good for our readers as well. So I love it. I'm glad you took it up. It's fun.
Yeah, and I love that you're putting it on YouTube as well. We just had Dana Sacco here, and she's finally got her YouTube channel monetized. Just in the couple weeks since we last had her on, she's been able to do that. And so the flash fiction sounds like another cool way to add to that, to get those followers, get those subscribers, get those views.
You're going to get the followers because I think I'm up to 5,000 followers now, but I don't have enough hours because it's flash fiction. So
Okay.
I'm not monetized yet.
If you throw a few audiobooks up there, you might be able to get the hours in. That's one of the advantages of doing that. All right, we're almost out of time. How do we tell our listeners to come find you? What's the best place to do that? Do you have a website, socials, that sort of thing?
I have a website. It's oliviaregal.com. And some authors are very brave and they have the .fr, .de, whatever. I'm lazy. Like I said, the least effort is my favorite thing. So when you go to my site, you'll have a tab that will say Deutsch, Italian, or you can recognize your own language if English is not your thing. But the landing page is the books in English.
Fantastic. All right, so for everybody who's been listening in, we'll be sure to put together a blog post about this episode so you can find out all the cool stuff that Olivia talked about today, the translations and all the interesting other side stuff that she's doing that's using AI as well. It will be up on bravenewbookshelf.com along with this episode and the full transcript when the time comes. Danica, do you want to say a few final words for us?
Of course, you know me, I love to encourage everyone. Make sure you are liking, following our YouTube. Olivia did this great, cute little visual with the books. So if you want to see the video of her doing that, it's very important to do that. Make sure you like and follow our Facebook page for Brave New Bookshelf. And of course, make sure that you're finding FFA and Publish Drive on socials as well, following us in all those places. Keep up with us. And let's spread the good word.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for coming, Olivia. We enjoyed talking with you. I can't wait to do it again sometime soon. We'll definitely see you in class, that's for sure. All right, everybody, thanks for tuning in. We'll see you guys in the next episode, okay? Bye.
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 Thanks for joining us on the Brave New Bookshelf. Be sure to like and subscribe to us on YouTube and your favorite podcast app. You can also visit us at bravenewbookshelf.com, sign up for our newsletter, and get all the show notes.